8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Knotfest.com presents Talk to Me. With over 300 interviews under his belt and 6 years running, your host Joshua Toomey interviews metal and rock's heaviest hitters. Follow the show at Talk to Me Talk. Here's your host, Joshua Toomey.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into another episode of Talk to Me here on Knotfest.com. The guest this week is Nick Nocturnal. You guys know him as the YouTube sensation himself. Chris, how we doing?
What is up, man? How are we?
We're doing well, man. As we started to record, the bosses, Slipknot, have released a new song, The Dying Song, Time to Sing. And we checked it out as we started to record, man. I'm thoroughly enjoying it.
I like it. Sounds like Slipknot to me. Perfect.
Next. But yeah. The new album looks like it'll be out September 30th, called The End So Far.
Yeah, that'll be good, man. How long has it been since the last one? It's been like longer than a little bit, right?
We Are Not Your Kind was 2019, but I think it was just a pandemic record that they didn't really get to.
Right.
To, but it looks like the Gray Chapter is 2014 is probably what everybody's kind of going back to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, even that, even 19, that's 3 years.
That's true.
You know, I guess it's time, but yeah, I'm pumped. New Slipknot, that's always good. And not just because we're on the channel. That's just good in my life. Good in my life.
We were watching the video though. And the one thing that I've noticed over the last couple of years is, Jim Root went from like looking kind of cool to like the coolest looking dude in the band. I don't know.
Right.
Like, his hair just got super long and the crazy beard and stuff, man. Like he went from like, you know, he's in Slipknot, it's cool, to fuck, man, that's the coolest dude in the band.
Hell yeah. Dude, and am I wrong in thinking that really the only thing a Slipknot video does is makes you want to go see him live again?
Oh, absolutely.
That's all their videos do for me is I'll watch a new video and I'm like, all right, I need to go see him again.
Yeah. I knew that the new album or the new song was coming. I just didn't know when. And I went back and listened to a little Slipknot today on the way home from work. And the one thing I really appreciate about them is they've got so many members in the band, but yet you can still hear everything in the band too. You know, the drums, all the extra drum work gets heard. And even in the new tune, the bass player gets like a little bass run here and there and stuff, man. So you get stuff in every Slipknot song of all 9 members.
You know,
it's not just not just for show. It actually, comes through on album.
Sure. No, I mean, dude, they are a 50 piece or whatever they are, but every guy does have a job, and it definitely shines through on every single song on every single album, man. It's what makes them, I guess.
Absolutely. Well, man, I did my first ever live show on Friday.
Okay.
And it's funny, we got to the venue and we get there about half hour before the show was supposed to start. And the dude running the place, his name is Trey, sings in a band called Devil's Cut. They've been doing stuff with Jelly Roll. They played Welcome to Rockville. Cool guy. I've known him forever. I'm really happy for all the success that seems to be coming his way.
Sure.
He's one of the co-owners of the Spar. And so he's always like, hey, come do a live podcast. And I'm like, I don't know, man. I can't just do a live show. This is not a opinionated show that's just me sitting with a microphone type thing. So I needed some guests, and Flaw is local here. They were, a Louisville band. And
sure.
I reached out to a couple of the guys and Flaw and said, hey, would you like to come do a first album kind of deep dive? And
right.
They said, yeah. So I go to the venue and I get there, and we had, this is a newer bar. We had been there maybe a few weeks ago to just see a show.
Okay.
And nice PA, everything set up, ready to go. So I'm assuming when I get there, there'll be a nice PA, everything set up. And I walk in and he's like, yeah, man, you can go ahead and set up. And I look over, there's no PA, no nothing. And I'm like, kind of need a PA to do what I'm thinking. And he's like, oh, but they were going to have a new metal night later on that night. So they had a DJ coming that had PA speakers and microphones and all that stuff. So they called him up and said, hey, can you get here a little early, set up so we can do this podcast real quick, and then you can do new metal night afterwards.
Okay.
And the guy was super cool about it. Like normally, you know, you might think that there would be some issues there, but I think, I think Trey kind of smoothed it over by like, hey, this guy works for Slipknot, you know,
right.
Like, he's not just some hack up there trying to do this. So, he shows up, sets up everything, but I had my inner Chris Akin like fighting me because as, as soon as there was one hint of issue, I was like, fuck it. Let's just go home. You know, like, and I was like, I got to fight through. And, you know, and, you know, my inner Neely came out and found a solution.
Nice.
But yeah, so we guy sets up, PA sets up, I interviewed Trey, talked about his band. Lauren Kozlowski from Roach Coach was there, got him up there. We kind of broke down a couple of Mount Rushmore lists of new metal.
Okay.
And then the guys from Flaw jumped up there and, you know, we did about, I think all together about 45 minutes total of interview. I'm still curious to see how the audio comes out because it was outside and the bar is near like the highway.
Oh, nice.
So we gotta find out to see, if the audio is salvageable, but, I think there's going to be enough to get at least something out there for everybody.
Sure.
Cool experience. About 20 people there. You know, right. It was space was a little bit bigger. So there was like, you know, a group of four here, a group of four there, a group of five. Right. You know, it was spread out enough to where it was, you know, it wasn't too bad. But it was funny because I was talking, you know, to the guests and I would kind of glance out every once in a while and kind of, you know, I'm like, there were some people I knew and some people I didn't know. And I kind of wondered if like the people that I didn't know were like, will this guy ever shut up?
Yeah. You know, I'm trying to drink my beer.
I'm trying to have a beer and I got a fucking this guy up here. And Melissa was standing. My wife was standing kind of near the kind of the door to the inside.
OK.
And so she heard, you know, some people coming out like, what's going on out here? And, you know, one guy was like, oh, they're doing a podcast and blah, blah, blah. And she said one lady came out and she's like, I didn't know there was a comedy show tonight.
A comedy show.
I guess I'm super hilarious or something.
Oh, yeah.
But she said, you know, everybody that was watching was having a good time. And well, and I definitely get like people that get on stage and just crave like that, you know, comedians that get up there. And even if they bomb, you know, they want to do it again. Like now I'm like, oh, man, now for the next one. Right. I'm already thinking next one. You know, as I'm doing it, I'm like, you know, because I'm running the you know, the recorder and, you know, making sure the interview's going, you know, just a lot on your plate and it's all going through my head. I'm like, all right, just got to keep this interesting. Got to keep it going. Got to keep the conversation going. Got to make sure the, you know, microphone placement's okay and stuff like that. And you're doing all that. And then I get off stage and I'm like, oh God, cause I haven't played a show. I haven't been on stage in 13 years, I think. Right. So, wow. I mean, it's been a minute since I've been in front of some people.
Yeah, that sounds fun though, dude. And you know what, dude, if you weren't doing that, then it would be a waste anyway, because if you got up there and you didn't get the bug back, then it'd be like, oh, why am I doing this, you know? Right. But the fact that you got the bug back, now you're like, all right, maybe I can make this part of Talk To Me, you know, make it the Talk To Me Live, you know?
Right.
So that'll be cool, man. I'm anxious to see. Is there video or just audio?
Yeah, there's video. They you know, my friend Mike was there taking photos. Okay. I was like, the photos probably end up being the coolest thing of the whole night.
Nice.
You know, just because it looks like I'm, you know, doing something cool. But yeah, there's video, there's audio, there's, you know, hopefully I can piece it all together and come up with something cool. But yeah, cool. It was just nice to be in front of some people. And the only bad thing about it is the town. Because Louisville, you know, there's three bands here, tops, you know, there was Flaw, there was Primer, and then there's Knocked Loose, you know?
Right.
And funny enough, the drummer from Knocked Loose was at the live show. And so I think he's interested in doing one. So hopefully maybe, you know, somewhere down the line, you know, if he's still in town, get up there and do something with him too, man. Cause that band is great.
Dude, you're just going to have to find some Saturday dates when there's a band in town and have them meet you at 2 o'clock and do, you know, lunchtime with Lamb of God or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, something like that.
Yeah. It's going to be a lot of fun. Maybe we can do it. Maybe Pantera will come through and I'll have the new lineup of Pantera out there.
Yeah. Still doesn't feel right. Does it?
As much hate as that has gotten online, I think I'm turning right into it, man. I'm all for this. Like, I'm like, give it to me. You know, you said on the last show, you know, you don't know how you feel, but you'll pay $500 for a ticket. Yeah. I'm like, I know how I feel now, and I'm going to pay $500 for a ticket.
Sure. You know, and I'll be honest, Zach Wilde kind of swayed me in his interview with Jose. When he brought up the Led Zeppelin thing with Jason.
Yeah.
And then I was like, all right, if they're doing it in that model of they're not reconstituting Pantera. They're just saying, well, this is Pantera. And they're playing the songs, even though Jason is clearly not a Led Zeppelin guy. If they're doing it in that same vein, I'm in, you know, whatever. And like you, I think I watched 400 videos of Charlie on stage with Phil and Zach on stage with Phil and Rex. And, you know, and I was like, yeah, it still sounds good. Doesn't sound like Pantera, but it sounds pretty fucking good. So, yeah, I'm in. Whatever.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, if you went to the show and they made no mention of Dime or Rec or Dime or Vinny, and they just like, we're trying to say this is Pantera now and don't worry about that over there. Like that's one thing, but I mean, this is going to be a celebration. I mean, I listened to that interview too with Matt Pinfield and Jose Mangan with Zach. And you know, I still think they should have announced Zach and Charlie to begin with.
Yeah.
Because the initial thing was just like, man, this is going to be, and no offense to the Illegals, but if this is just the Illegals plus Rex, that was going to be a problem. But now that you've got, you know, Charlie and Zach, basically the two people that were pretty much rumored to do it anyway, or everybody's on everybody's list to do it. I think that, you know, made a lot of people a little bit more into this thought of a Pantera out there on tour.
Sure. Do you find it weird that they still haven't made like the official press release announcement that it's just kind of piecemealing it out? And the guys are even talking about it before there's an announcement on it.
Yeah. I mean, nothing official from Pantera yet, like nothing official on any Facebook or Instagram or anything. It's just, but Zach is, you know, saying he's doing it and, you know, they got the, you know, rumors of them already, headlining, what is that, Heaven and Hell Fest in Mexico. And, you know, you're already starting to get those little tidbits out there, but I mean, I don't know. Are they just maybe waiting for everything to come together and one big post of you know, Pantera returns with Zach and Charlie. And
here's the schedule, right?
Yeah. Rather than, I don't know, man. It's crazy that it
could be. You would think though that they would, at least I would think that they would want to piece part it together and just say, okay, here's the lineup, and after X number of years, Pantera, the, you know, the music, the heritage, members, you know, the blah blah blah, the, you know, the big blown up press release, and then later get your double bite by then, okay, here's the tour dates, or here's the initial tour dates, and leak out like three, and then the whole thing like a week later or whatever. So I mean, I would think that's what they would do, but who the fuck am I? I don't know.
I think it is going to be surreal to see that logo on, you know, on flyers and see that logo on, you know, Riot Fest 2023, you know, Pantera Night and Louder Than Life and all those things. Just seeing that logo again is going to be crazy.
Even on an LED on a venue. How cool is that, man? That's going to be like, whoa, you know, see at a bit, especially it's going to be big rooms. It ain't going to be, you know, an 800 seater. It's going to be, what do you think it plays? Do you think it plays 15,000 seat sized?
I think this goes arena. I think this has to. I mean, it has to have, for the arena, I think it would have to have, you know, some pretty decent openers too, you know, a nice package, but I'm still thinking that they play at least all of the rooms Slayer did on the last Slayer tour.
Yeah, I would think so.
You know, and they, you know, Slayer played here at the Yum Center that holds like 20,000. Right. I think they probably blocked off the, you know, the top level like you do some places, and you know, a municipal auditorium in Nashville is like a 10 grand, you know, seater.
So, right.
So I'm trying, you know, it's gotta be somewhere like that. It can't be theaters, you know, 3,000 people type places.
Yeah, no, it's gotta be bigger than that. I mean, that's, otherwise why do it?
Yeah. I will say that I actually, one time I interviewed Phil and I had just seen Metallica at the Yum Center here, which is, you know, the 22,000 seat or whatever. And that's when Jim Brewer was doing that, where he would play snippets of music before Metallica came out. And one of the biggest pops of the entire night was when they played Walk. Like they, right. he played like a snippet of Walk over the PA and the place went bananas. And so I'm curious to see if that'll carry over. And I mean, there's a lot of people that are saying they're not going to go to this, but I think there's a lot of people that once they start seeing these YouTube videos rolling out and mm-hmm. you know, it's done right. And you know, there's a tribute to Dime and a tribute to Vinny and you know,
sure.
Just that's what I've got some friends that are super close friends that we went to, you know, we saw Pantera together mm-hmm. 10 times.
Sure.
And like they're one dude's adamant about not supporting this. And I'm like, dude, we're too old to be, you know, mm-hmm. fighting this. Just go have fun and just, you know, run with the fire and the flames and the lasers and the light show. Give it all to me, man. Let's go have a good night of fucking metal.
I just don't, you know, the more we're getting used to it, I guess, the more I'm getting used to the fact that it's like, it's not replacing what we had.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's the sticking point for everybody. Everybody that's bitching saw the original band.
Yeah.
Everybody that, no young kid that's 25 years old that loves Pantera music is like, this sucks. I'm not going. It's all us old heads that saw, you know, Far Beyond Driven tour or.
Yeah.
You know, Vulgar tour or whatever, you know, I mean, we saw it at its absolute pinnacle and this isn't going to be its absolute pinnacle, but it's just like any other, heritage band that's out there, you know, still playing after 25, 30 years. It's not as good as the original, but it still can be fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, take it as it is, you know, is it a tribute show? Yes. You know, is it a tribute show called Pantera? Yes. So what?
Yeah,
you know, it's still gonna be good.
Well, let's take it to the Led Zeppelin thing. I mean, you were a giant Led Zeppelin fan, and so when they reunited with Jason,
mm-hmm.
like, were you okay with that back then?
Probably not. I don't remember exactly, but the initial thought was probably not. You know, but you know, again, once you saw the video of it, it was pretty good, and. In Jason's defense, I guess, you know, he's done ever since then, he's done the tribute to his dad,
yeah,
you know, or the tribute to Zeppelin, which has been phenomenal, which has been as good as any. I mean, I've seen a zillion Led Zeppelin tribute bands, and the Bonham Evening or Bonham Experience, depending on what year it is is as good as anything that's out there today. And the way he does it now, Pantera could learn a lot and probably will from watching that, because like he plays the songs, but in the middle, he kind of like he takes an intermission and then he comes back. And when he comes back, it's with like a 10 or 15 minute little video of his dad. You know, but not just of, well, here's his dad playing, you know, there'll be some playing, but there'll be some, you know, behind the scenes video and whatever. And I mean, Pantera is just set up for that to just do 7-8 songs and then come with a video of the unreleased stuff, the Dime shot for Dime Vision 2 or for Pantera 4 or whatever. You know, I mean, there's all that video that is still out there that would be awesome to see in a show, you know, as the true tribute to them, you know, Dimebag shooting fireworks at people while they sleep and stuff like that. I think that would make it into a really cool show experience. So I think they have a lot of material to work with. It's just, I hope they do. And honestly, I think they will, just by the names that I've seen of the management companies and what, you know, McGee doesn't do anything small.
Right.
You know, Doc McGee he's not known for his work with Bang Tango, for God's sakes. He's, you know, he works only with big clients and he does huge shows. So I think it's going to be a huge show. And whether it is or isn't, they're going to take my money willingly.
Right. Yeah. As soon as this goes on sale, I'm just like, you know, I mean, for God's sakes, I've got the CFH tattoo, you know, like, I think that should get you some sort of free admission or a special VIP package or something.
Yeah. Free tchotchke at the gate or something. Right.
Right. Well, a guy I interviewed the day after, the Pantera announcement was Max Cavalera. That interview will be out in 2 weeks.
Right.
But I asked him that, you know, this was before the announcement of Zach and Charlie. Mm-hmm. And I asked him who he would want in the band, and he said the drummer from Power Trip and Gary Holt. And I was like, that's a good one. But you know, he knew that the, I don't know if he knew the actual people, but I think he was trying to go a little bit off the the path on that one. But he basically said in it too that what he would love is that they could do the Chaos AD record, like with him and Igor opening for this Pantera thing. I'm like, Jesus Christ. I mean, you take $1,000 from me.
Kidding. That would be, wow. That would be really awesome. And who knows? Maybe that does happen. It could.
Well, I mean, that's the big, that's the next one, you know, the Chaos AD record. Mm-hmm. And that's such a, I mean, just for me, that's such a pivotal. I mean, that's where I came in on Sepultura, and, you know, with Territory and Refuse Resist and, and Slave New World, all that stuff. I mean, I'm just like that record was, I tore that record up, you know, when that one came out. And, but we do have some more, Max is doing the rounds because of the new Soulfly album Totem.
Right.
It will be out soon. So, but it looks like he actually asked, you know, said, don't blame my wife for the breakup of Sepultura's classic lineup.
Yeah, please. Of course you blame her. Of course you blame her. She's the reason. That's been documented forever. Why is he saying no?
Yeah, that was the word like the day it happened.
Yeah. Why is he saying no now?
But let's give credit where credit is due. The Dan Chan Show.
Oh, I don't know that one.
I have not seen that one either, but it looks like it's a YouTube show. He was asked in a new interview with Dan Chan Show, Max was asked if he thought the rest of the band would continue without him after he chose to leave the group in December of 1996. He responded, I think judging by their personalities, yeah, I thought they would carry on. As for how he felt about the other members continuing the band that he co-founded, Max said, it's really mixed emotions, especially because me and Igor being in there from the very, very beginning, and nobody that is in that band now was there. Not even Paulo was there in the very beginning. So it's something that feels very personal and sacred that you were there in the beginning and now you're not. At the same time, it's one of those things in life that just happens and you've got to move on with other things.
Mm-hmm. So, but he's not addressing the Gloria thing.
I continued on. I don't regret it. It's like anything. It ran its course. One of those things, though, I'll say is extremely frustrating to me that some of the fans don't understand, and it's really easy to blame people for it. And a lot of people end up blaming my wife, Gloria. They always go, she broke up the band. And the truth is we grew apart. We started hating each other. It happened to the Beatles and it happened to other bands, Pantera. It's just how it is. We just didn't find the joy in playing with each other anymore, and it was time to move on. So it's a cheap shot to blame her. Let's just blame her. She's got to be the reason why that happened. And it's like, no, not at all. We are the reason. I'd rather they blame me than her or somebody else. Blame me for Sepultura splitting up. I would much rather prefer that.
All right, fair enough. Not what he said in 1996, but okay. In 96, he said point blank, you know, I remember those interviews, and it was the band doesn't want to work with Gloria as their management. That was the excuse that was given out there.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, because she was becoming such a huge part in the band. It's not just because, you know, they were married and husband and wife. I mean, she was managing the band and they didn't want to do that anymore.
Yeah. You know, the interesting thing out of what he said there though, and I agree with him 100%, it had run its course. I think not that I didn't like Roots. I did, but when you heard some of the stuff that was sort of kicked around between Blood Rooted and what was the first one with Derek? Is that Nation?
Against?
Against. Yeah. When you heard those ideas, the stuff that was leftover stuff with Blood Rooted and then the stuff on Against, there wasn't a lot there.
Right.
You know, I mean, I think Derek came in and they refound themselves in a different way. Because if you listen to any of the Derek stuff, it definitely has a different vibe, as it should. It's a different band, really, with a different, different front guy. Yeah. But I think he's right that if you listen to Roots and you listen to the first Soulfly record, now those two records sound kind of close together.
Oh, yeah.
They sound a lot closer than the first Sepultura or Bloodrooted and Chaos, mm-hmm. you know, I think.
Yeah, you could definitely see the progression from Roots into the first Soulfly. That sounded mm-hmm. like a pretty natural progression there. But yeah, I'm still not a big fan of that first Sepultura with Derek Green.
Yeah, I'm not either.
I think most people have always said that those songs are probably written for Max and mm-hmm. and not for Derek. But I mean, over the last few years, and it's only been with the last few years, have I really listened to the Derek Green era of Sepultura, because I think it just goes back to that, you know, the split. I went with Max. Some people mm-hmm. went Sepultura, and then that first Sepultura didn't hit me. So I never really gave Sepultura a chance.
Sure.
Until the last couple of records, and the last couple of records have been amazing.
Yeah. Well, you know me, I've always been on board. I was not on board with Against, though.
Yeah.
I will say that album is not very good, but from Nation on, that's good stuff, man. It always kills me that there's so many metal fans out there that are not checking out the Derek Green era, because he's put out, dude, I would say the last 15, 20 years, you know, especially stuff, Alex, Mediator, Dante, XXI. I mean, those are all great records, let alone the last Machine Messiah and Quattro. Those are fantastic. You know, they're hitting their stride now. It's a great band.
Yeah, man, it is crazy to think that, you know, Max and Igor started Sepultura even before Paolo was in the band.
Yeah.
So I mean, you've truly got like zero original members, you know, when they're playing now. And even though mm-hmm. Paolo, like with Andreas taking that time off for the passing of his wife and everything else too, I mean, you know, you got Paolo up there being the only original member, and from what they're saying, he wasn't even in the band to begin with.
Right. Yeah, I know. I think we said this on the show. I would not have been happy if I caught one of them shows and the only guy up there was Paolo. Oh man, come on.
I will say at the Nashville date of the Chaos AD tour with Pantera, that was when Max had canceled because of his knee or something. Mm-hmm. And Paolo was out in the crowd, like talking to everybody, signing autographs and stuff. So I always appreciated Paolo for that one.
Sure. All I know is that was that tour. That's my number two tour of all time, just behind Day on the Green with Pantera, Sepultura, Biohazard. Doesn't get better than that, man.
Jeez.
That was Violence Unleashed, man. It was so good.
Can't wait to see Chaos AD. I can't wait to see, you know, Pantera out there mm-hmm. again. I can't wait to see any of this stuff, man.
Yeah, the clocks are rolling back 30 years, man.
That's so right.
It's that time machine thing you got behind you there. It's back to 2002.
Oh yeah, look at that. You can see the time
flux capacitor. Yeah.
Yeah. Too funny, man. But yeah, it's gonna be a good time. But well, the guest this week is Nick Nocturnal. If you guys are into the internet,
yeah,
into the YouTube, into everything, man. Nick is one of the biggest dudes in our field, I guess you would say. And
sure,
it's cool to kind of get in. And we really don't talk a ton about, like, you know, how he got into it and making videos and stuff like that. But you know, he was known for a long time as doing guitar covers very quickly. Mm-hmm. Like I remember, like, I think I talked to him in the interview about it, but the Trivium put out a song and like the next video down was already a guitar cover by Nick Nocturnal, like almost immediately.
Right.
And like, that was kind of his go-to was these very quick, you know, guitar covers and things like that. And so we talk about that and talk about the reaction videos and all that good stuff. So without further ado, we'll check out some of his band, Termina, correct? That's his band?
Yes, Termina.
We'll mm-hmm. check out some Termina, and then we will speak to Nick Nocturnal. And then Chris and I will be back with you momentarily.
Cool.
I'm
guys, welcome on the one, the only Nick Nocturnal to Talk To Me podcast here, notfest.com. Nick, how are we today?
I am well existing. How about you?
Well, I mean, you've heard my whole life story before this even started. You dove in the deep end of the Toomey universe over here, but you know, yeah, good so far, man. Before we dive into the YouTube stuff, man, let's talk about what is it? Is it Termina? Is that how you say it?
Yes, Termina.
Termina, man, I'm digging that track to the Translucent, man. I like it. Tell me every single thing about it ever.
Okay, sure. Yeah, it's I mean, it's an internet project with me, and it started with me and Andy, who's the vocalist of Monuments, who was we first determined before he even joined Monuments, but it was like Macari, Wander, and I don't know, 50 other bands he's in. So it just started with them, and we did a whole album before, self-produced, self-mixed, mastered everything, you know, did what we could, and that's it, released it, and, you know, released modern metal stuff, core stuff. There's some deathcore songs, metalcore songs, post-hardcore-y stuff, you know, it's just weird experimental stuff. It's just fun modern music that, because me and Andy both listen to a lot of different shit, so we just like are like, all right, well, let's just throw that in, add some breakdowns, and call it a day, kind of. so that's basically what we did with the first album, and we learned what worked, we learned what didn't, and for this next one, this album rollout, and the first song being Translucent, we're like, all right, well, we need to like level up in all these areas, like, you know, we're songwriting, sure, and all that, and we need to experiment, you know, take the W's from the first album, build on that, take, you know, get rid of the L's and learn how to deal with that. And number one, we're like, well, we need a professional mix and master. Like, we're not doing this shit ourselves again. So we were able to get Zach Cervini to mix and master this track as well as everything else. And he's, he's the guy. Like, there's not much else to say. You know, with Motionless and White, Bring Me the Horizon, like, all pop punk bands too, like he does every new thing basically,
right?
That's like really big, so that was super awesome to actually have someone mix and master now. But also we're like, well, what if we have like an actual drummer this time, because I just programmed drums on the first album, and the first one person that came to my mind is like probably one of the most unique modern metal drummers that like is just so sporadic and weird and fucking crazy, and that was Chris Turner from Ocean's 8 Alaska. So I was already talking with him at that point because, you know, I'm a fan of Oceans and a fan of his solo stuff. And I was just like, hey, do you want to do drums for this? And he was like, sure. So that's kind of where we have our team right there. It's really me, Andy, Zach mixing, and then Chris on drums. And then our videographer that we also used for the first album, Patrick Lawler. So that was a big thing, just like leveling up our team and actually getting something more cohesive where it really sounds like a professional modern metal band, even though it's the internet band, and just see as far as we can get within what we can do. And that song was Translucent, out of all the songs we already have finished, was just the song that like was the perfect middle ground of like heavy bullshit with like catchy choruses and a lot of melody and just experimental, fun, crazy groove and stuff like that. So we're like, all right, well, middle ground's usually the perfect first single, so let's throw that one out.
There's a thousand questions that are running through my mind, so I'm trying to figure out which one is the proper one here. But I mean, you see like a Jared Dines, and you know the guys that kind of get into the ethos of metalcore and all that with the videos and things like that, and then you see them do a band, and you're like, you're trying to see if people are going to follow the band itself. And
yeah,
I know he did some touring with like Trivium and things like that, and going out and doing the video work. So I mean, what is the expectation of the crossover to actual, you know, like taking the band seriously, not just, hey, this is Nick Nocturnal's, you know, thing he's doing, another piece of content that he's doing,
right,
or something, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's with my channel. I mean, it's funny because I actually started my YouTube channel with original music and wanting to promote original music. And then I used it through cover. I would do guitar covers to kind of get my name out there. And then that just became a thing. And then I've expanded to all these different avenues for reactions and fucking meme videos and all this stuff over the years. But I also always had a lot of, even though they were like meme videos or like stereotype videos or whatever the fuck, like, you know, types of riffs and this or types of this, I had a lot of segments and videos over the years that did do really well that were original things. Like I would come up with original riffs to describe like subjects in school. Right. So like in math class, right, I and that's me writing random shit, right? It's I do a crazy math course style riff, or like one of my favorite ones is mythology, but it's metal, I forgot the title of it. So like all the different mythologies, like Greek mythology, Egyptian mythology.
Okay. Yeah.
And I'd write riffs based on those themes, and people seem to really dig it. So like, even though I obviously have that, I'm a YouTuber and have all that stuff, I always laced a good amount of my content with original music, even if it was hidden and it wasn't just in your face, here's a new song. Right. So I feel like that transition hasn't been that hard for me in terms of the conversion and people. Because I know, as for YouTubers and a lot of my homies, like if they release original music, like it does not, it's tough.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, where are the memes? Right? Where are the fucking
memes? Is this supposed to be funny?
Yeah, exactly. Right. That's the first question usually. Yeah. So, but I've noticed, and even though it's made my channel take longer, I think, to grow at more of a steady pace instead of like, here's like big growth spurts like everywhere. Mm-hmm. It's made it so the people that usually stay are about like the whole kind of picture. Like they're about cool, like they want to keep up with music and look at reactions and covers. They maybe mildly like guitar specific bass things, and they like just original music. They like some of the meme stuff. So I've been lucky that I'm able to have that, I guess, more so with my audience and community. So if I do, you know, and I've done this, like here's a reaction followed by here's a guitar cover, followed by here's a meme video, followed by here's original music. There's not usually they all do like decently well. Like it's not like this big differentiation between one or the other in terms of views or viewership or like just people that seem to care as much. So that's how I've been able to, I guess, over the years do that, by purposely cultivating content that kind of has that variety-esque feel and still has original music in it, even if it's sudden. But yeah, I mean, it's translated pretty crazily, even doing like my stupid Nick Knock trap metal shit, which I guess is still kind of meaning, but it is original music.
Right.
That got more, God damn, what's happening outside? That got more views than like anything within 24 hours I've ever released. And I was like, why? You know, so it's like, and Termina too, like Termina always does really well. That's why we premiere it on my channel instead of just making a Termina channel, because it just helps push it, and people on my channel seem interested in the original music just as much usually as like the reactions or the meme content and all that.
Now, is this something that you want to get off the ground enough to full on tour? And then, but at the same time, that would take you away from streaming and things like that. So you would go out on tour, you would be opening for whoever, making your $50 a night. You know, can you make that make sense?
I ain't
not
touring.
Stream. You know what I'm
I
saying?
Just ain't touring. That's the answer to that. It's just not happening. I'm not a dude that. I'm fortunate enough that because touring is like
hard.
It's hard. That's the thing. I have so much respect for these bands on that grind. Like I know what that is. It's not fucking easy. It's a grind. You're away from home all the time. You're barely making money from a lot of things. Like you have to hustle to sell merch. You have to get to play shows every night, and if you're feeling not good, it doesn't fucking matter. You got to get up and do your shit, right? You're around a bunch of people that hopefully you like all day, you know, your bandmates in a smelly ass van. Like that's a grind. If I can avoid that, and again, I know there's the big benefits of, well, you want to be a tour musician, you want to, you know, travel the world and you want to perform, and that's awesome. Me as a musician, I love writing way more than I love performing, and I always have. So I don't lose out personally on much. Traveling the world's cool, but I mean, I feel like I'll just actually take a vacation if I want to like travel, right? In that sense. And connecting with the fans, even though it's not the same thing, I get that satisfaction through Twitch, which I know, again, it's not the same thing. It's not in person, but I do get that feeling just from being online and talking to my community and stuff like that. It's not as awesome as a feeling, I'm sure, you know, playing live in front of a bunch of people and meeting all your fans. But I get enough of that where I don't have these itches of like, oh, I need to perform. Oh, I need to go tour. I need to do this. So if I can avoid it, which I'm just fortunate enough that I can with what I've set up doing YouTube, I just am like, yeah, I'm not going to tour. That's kind of how it goes for me.
Now, I was going through some of the videos last few days, and one thing was, I was like, I need to check out the videos, like the 10 albums that changed your life.
Yes.
And you put yourself out there because, I mean, you know, you said Avenged Sevenfold, you said Disturbed, you didn't try to take the cool route, you know, like you didn't be like, oh man, the one thing that changed my life was this weird Scandinavian band that no one's ever heard of. You know, you didn't do that. You went Avenged Sevenfold, you went, you know, Disturbed, things like that. So did you do that knowing that you would waiting to see the comment section, like just to see what they would see?
I didn't really care because I feel like in the sense of when anyone talks about something they're really passionate about, you can tell and they're taken back in the nostalgia years. Like, even if you fucking hate sometimes what they're saying, there's some level of like emotional attachment or usual respect that is given when you see someone that's that passionate talking about real shit that they really did love and growing up with. So I didn't really mind that as much because I get the same sense too with, like, you know, even if I don't care about what someone's passion is, just the fact I'm seeing someone talking and they're so passionate about it and they love it. You know, you can tell they're in their own world when they're talking about it. Like, it just gives me, it makes me smile, even though if I could give a fuck about what they're talking about, you know what I mean? Right. So I didn't mind. I was just like, no, like, this is, I mean, you guys hear the influences in the music. You guys see the guitar covers. Like, there's no hidden secret here, you know, that I get influenced by like some of these bands and I don't care if they get a bad rap. Like, this is the music I grew up on. And that's why they changed my life in that sense.
When you brought up Disturbed and you were like that, I love the passion. Like, it was so funny, like how just you were like, man, this riff is like top 10 riff of all time. Oh, and I'm like, people really like Disturbed this much?
10,000 Fists for me was really important for me. And then after Indestructible was cool. And then even Down With The Sickness was the album, right? I always messed that one up. Like, that was a cool album. But like 10,000 Fists just in my life at that point, that one just did something to me. Like, just loving the riffs and everything. And yeah, to this, like, that Stricken riff, man. That riff, I love that riff. I think it's one of the most powerful, just energetic riffs. And I mean, hey, I'll listen to deathcore all day long and listen to the craziest, most techiest riffs, some tech death, sure. But that doesn't give me the same feeling as it's just like sometimes something as simple as Disturbed, Stricken, and it is what it is.
The one thing with Waken the Fallen that I remember when that came out, I was all about it. Like, I was listening to it all the time. This also shows our age difference, because I think you said you were in the seventh grade and I think I was just in my first apartment. But but listening to it, and I remember when City of Evil came out, I was not into it at all. I was like, this is too polished. This is too much singing. This is too much this, that. Now, City of Evil is a masterpiece when you go back and listen to it. I mean, like the guitar work and the drums. I mean, there's just so much going on that's so good with City of Evil. But I remember getting it and being like, this isn't what I fell in love with. But you know, that was such a great, you know, pivotal record at the time.
Yeah, well, I mean, Waking the Fallen was their metalcore record, and City Evil was not their metalcore record anymore. Right. So it was just like, it was a genre change, but at the same time, it still sounded like Avenged, because even when they did Waking the Fallen, they did it in their own way. Like, that wasn't just like basic metalcore. That was this darkened, weird, wacky metalcore, which was cool, and that's what stuck with me the most, and that's why I love that album. Even though, what, like, I don't expect kids to listen to that nowadays and be like, oh, this is the greatest thing ever, but like back in the 2000s, early 2000s, like, that was like the shit for me, and it was so unique and so cool to hear that stuff in the styles. And again, a lot of those records, to me, I was a guitarist mainly, like, that was it. So like, I connected a lot with just even the guitar work and just being like, whoa, that's so cool how they're doing this. Like, all the soloing is crazy and the melody choices, like, and like, that was almost first important to me sometimes more than even just like as a metalhead. And then it started to blend, and nowadays it's much more metalhead and consumer mindset is how I get connected way more than like the guitar work. But back in the day, like, that's why a lot of those albums for me, just like, love the guitar work. And like, yes, dude, City of Evil, I mean, MIA in itself, like, that song is like a whole marathon, and like, there's like five fucking solos and stuff, and it's just like, that song is epic. Like, that is such an epic song, and it's the whole album's filled with just fun, different bangers, which, yeah, they got a lot of shit for, I'm sure, when they released it, but they also reached mainstream with that album,
right? Oh yeah, you can't you know, hate on them too much for what that album became and what their career has become. But yeah, it was as a kid that was like, you know, I grew up in the 90s listening to Metallica, Megadeth, whatever, and then Korn, Limp Bizkit, Deftones all come out, and then, but there was that moment in the late 90s where, you know, guitar solos were so frowned upon. You know, and then the early 2000s come around and you got Unearth coming out and Killswitch coming out. And, you know, all that Northeast stuff started popping up. And I've said that a thousand times on the show. It was like, you know, they basically said, oh, you can play guitar. You know, they gave you permission to play guitar solos again.
Yes.
And, you know, and then you had the West Coast stuff. You had, you know, Avenged Sevenfold and Atreyu and all those guys coming out, too. I mean, they were not only playing guitar solos. I mean, they were full on shredding. It was insane to hear that. It was nice to hear that again. And it was so foreign at the time. Like, I remember a friend of mine just hit the oncoming storm by unearth one day. Mm. He's like, just check this out. He's like, and you know, we were so, you know, zeros and ones on the guitars for so long, you know, it was like, oh shit, we can, you know, you can do this again.
Yeah. 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 It's just, I love that era. Like the early 2000s, I think even to this, like, love modern metal stuff to a point, but like that era to me is peak. It had everything. It had solos. It had some of the best riffs ever created. It still had really heavy breakdowns. It had huge choruses that were mm-hmm. catchy, hooky. It had melody everywhere. It just, that is everything I love about metal. Like all of that combined, and that era in so many ways was like perfect for it.
Oh yeah. And there are so many bands from that time that I thought were more niche that stood the test of time and are some of the biggest bands. I mean, even like a Hatebreed, you know, like how you would have never assumed of all those hardcore bands that were coming out at the time, Hatebreed was going to be the one that stuck.
Yeah. Yeah. Hatebreed is a fun one. I got that into that one later when I started to like get metalcore as the base, and then I went forward and then I went back and like it, weirdly enough, discovered Converge and stuff, mm-hmm. Norma Jean way later. And then I was like, well, what influenced them? And it was like, oh, like hardcore bands like Hatebreed and all that stuff. And it was like, it's interesting to see even just the evolution of, I guess, specifically metalcore and just like how it's all changed over the years based on the metas. And like you said, what's cool is like, oh, now solos are cool again. Like, what the fuck? Like, okay, so like everyone's doing solos, and then 2010s happen, and then solos aren't cool, it's just breakdowns and crab mm-hmm. everywhere. So it's like, it's interesting seeing all those shifts and things always being revisited with nostalgia and over like 20-year periods or whatnot.
Or like how quickly Job for a Cowboy was awesome, and then like they kind of went way too death metal. And like everybody just kind of gave up on them. But now if you look back, like if you say MySpace metal, I mean, Job for Cowboy is probably Mount Rushmore of that era.
Yeah. There were so many bands that just boomed during that MySpace. And I was like, oh God, I was maybe like 10, 11, 12, 13. I don't know exactly, right. But like even through then, like I wasn't using, I was an MSN kid. Like, to this day, that is the best messaging system. I don't care. Like, I love Discord, but like, nah, MSN's the best. So I was using MSN much more than I didn't really get into like the MySpace, but I like all the bands I knew, like, they were exploding during then. And I started to be like, what is this thing kind of? And I got into it just when it was dying. So I was like, well, that's fucking great. but there's so many crazy bands, and it started to integrate the internet culture, which is something I didn't know how important that would be for me later in my life, how the music industry was starting to get a little integrated with internet, which was great.
My Facebook anniversary came by the other day. And so it gives you the, you know, some of the first, you know, the Facebook memories will give you the first posts of the time or whatever. And my posts were like, this Facebook seems okay, but I think I'm going to stick with my MySpace. You know, and I'm like, yeah, that worked out for you too, Good job.
Yeah. Facebook. That's when I got into more of the internet other than MSN. That's when it was Facebook. It was like just the start, just at the end of MySpace. And that's when all the bands too that came from MySpace just went on Facebook and got like that Insta 1 mil followers basically, which was interesting to see. But then it just, I mean, Facebook, it was a new MySpace, and not much you can do. And again, I wasn't there for the glory days of MySpace, but I'm assuming MySpace was much better than Facebook.
Yeah, it definitely had its time and its moments, and you know, reading bulletins and you know, going to everyone's page, and you top eight, you could definitely never go, you know, you break up with your girlfriend, she's immediately out of your top eight, you know, your best friend's back in your top eight. It's a whole thing. It's like, you know, you're going to her face, you know, her MySpace see if you're still in her top eight. It was a whole thing, man. It was good times. what's not necessarily too much of the origin story of the Nick Nocturnal and everything else, right. But what's maybe the one thing that you that's come of this that you didn't expect?
Everything. Like literally, I was first of all, when I was growing, I never wanted to be in a band in general. I just liked guitar and music. And I liked writing. That was it, as like a hobby, as a passion, mm-hmm. like a deep passion, but like that was it. Also, most of my childhood, I just spent playing video games with my cousin in his room, like playing WoW and whatever, like in RuneScape and shit like that. So I just went to school, didn't like school. I knew I didn't like it, but I was just doing it. It was essentially, it was weirdly like I just was doing things, but knowing it wasn't going to lead to anything, but I was just doing it. I was just kind of existing, which was a weird thing. I didn't really realize it at the time, cause I didn't understand. I was like teenager, right? I didn't understand life. And I still don't. But like, you know what I mean? Like, I didn't really get like, what's the point? What am I doing? I just did things to do it. And I just knew I liked this music shit, right? But even at the time, it wasn't like, oh, like, yo, go be a YouTuber. Yo, go be a Twitch streamer. Like, that didn't exist. That wasn't like a job title,
right?
Like, as it is now. So it was like, will you be a band? And I already knew I didn't want to be in a band. So it was like, okay, well, I'm just going to do my own thing, release original music, see whatever the fuck happens, just for fun. And yeah, I was supposed to be an accountant. I have a commerce
degree. I went to school for accounting too, yeah.
Oh, yeah?
I started to, and then I was like, I can't do this. Like,
I felt that, but I just kept going, and instead I failed.
Yeah. So I didn't make it past like first semester, but that was the goal, and in a weird way, it was because numbers are the only true thing. You know, it's like there's with art and doing this stuff. I mean, it's so many variables, but when it comes to like actual numbers, I mean, you know, there's not much. I mean, I guess, you know, finances, I'm sure there's some sort of made up numbers, but somehow numbers seem to always make sense to me.
Yeah. But yeah, I was supposed to be an accountant. Like, that was like, and again, that was just like, well, I don't know what else to do. So like, sure, I'll go get like, if I got to do the real life thing, you know, I'll be an adult and I'll go be an accountant. But that was, and just cause I was good at business, good at numbers, but I was terrible at accounting. So yeah, I don't, it wasn't supposed to, that's the thing, like everything surprised me. None of this was supposed to happen at all. I just knew I loved it and I just followed it and kept kind of going. So yeah, I'd like meeting people, Jesus, random ass loud dogs, meeting people like these musicians I grew up idolizing.
Oh yeah, it was that's the best part. The
craziest thing. The fact that anyone even watches my stuff, like, yeah, I don't know how to describe, everything surprised me basically when doing this.
The one thing that always surprises me the most is when I started doing the interview side, where it's just a podcast, no video, no nothing. I assumed it would be for my friends, like my friends would listen. Right. But the one thing I realized is my friends don't care a single thing about what's going on, and the actual audiences are people I don't know.
Right.
And you know, my friends are supportive, and they're, you know, they appreciate what's going on. You know, they'll hit me with a, hey man, I saw you just interviewed blah blah blah, awesome job, you know, things like that. But I honestly assumed that my audience would be like 30 of my friends, and
right
it's you know, thousands of others.
Yeah it's a weird mindset. I mean, so I remember the first time I got a comment on SoundCloud, because I went on SoundCloud
before. Ooh, there you go.
YouTube, and I was like, whoa, someone commented on my song I wrote. What the fuck? You know, like, that was so exciting to me. And I didn't know that even that was a possibility. Meanwhile, like, whatever this thing is now that I do. So,
yeah, the first time Blabbermouth picked something up from the show, I was like, the checks are about to start rolling in.
Get that metalcore money. Yep.
I probably can't even leave the house today. I'll probably get, you know, bombarded for autographs. I can't even go to the grocery store anymore. But yeah, that did not work. That did not happen.
Oh, that's amazing.
So with the with Stranger Things, they were talking about somebody did the math, and Master Puppets was released early March of that year. Spring break, where what they're supposedly on is a couple of weeks later in most parts of the States. So, you know, roughly Homeboy had 2 weeks to learn Master Puppets, to play it, and, you know, and to fight off Vecarin or whatever the guy's name was. And the funny thing is, I posted it too, but the one thing that I noticed that most people were they're like, oh yeah, like this guy could do it. I saw multiple people saying, well, Nick Nocturnal can do a, you know, he'll pull a video out in 5 seconds after it's been released. So I think it's great that you've been kind of, you know, put into that world of, if, you know, Nick Nocturnal can do it, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's something that was never the intended thing, really, like, until I started seeing like, oh, that's my thing. And then I start to play into it. Right. Yeah. But like, it's so fun even nowadays. I rarely do guitar covers anymore. Cause I mean, it's just like, I did it for 5 years straight. Right. I love it. I just do them when I really want to do a song now. Like, it's like very rare, and it's much more fun because like, I got burnt out. Like, you do for 4 years, 5 years straight, guitar cover of like every new song you want to cover. Right. Like, you can't. Like, it's as simple as that. Like, if I kept going that way, I probably would have quit, which is sad to think about. But, and also just people just prefer the new medium of a reaction because it's more relatable. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be a guitarist to kind of connect with it as much. Not that you have to be a guitarist to watch a guitar cover, but a good chunk of people are guitarists, and you know, you watch reaction, anyone can watch it, right? So and also with a reaction, just like, there's a bigger differentiator, because like, sure, my differentiator basically was that I do it fast, and that's cool, but past the first 2 days, when everyone else then has covers up, your different, you know, your uniqueness is gone, other than it's just you doing the guitar cover and you hope you did it more right than the other person,
right?
And that's where it's just like, okay, well, at least, you know, a reaction, I'm talking, it's my personality, like, it's, no one's gonna have the same, you know, reaction video as me or whatever the fuck, right? So it's like, that's kind of how that's been evolved over time. But yeah, like, it's so funny, even nowadays I'll see on comments on original music videos, be like, can't wait for Nick to cover this, like, oh, right. Where's the guitar cover? And I'm like, I haven't done that like in like 4 years, fam. Like, thank you. It's crazy to see how that's still the thing, and like, hey, no complaints, I rather, it's not a bad thing to be like the guy for, you know. So
was it a thing where you were getting stuff early, or was it truly like,
oh no, oh okay. I didn't get shit early during the guitar era. Oh no. I never had labels reach out to me for anything. There was one instant ever, I don't know if I signed an NDA for it, because it's not like, because it was like a new thing, right? Like, they would never, like, a label hit me up, so I won't say the specifics just in case. I don't think I did though, but where they were going to roll out a song from a band I really liked, and they hit me up to do a guitar cover to premiere it. I've never had that happen, and that was like late already in like the guitar cover era. And then they ended up saying, we don't want to do this anymore after I did the video. And I was like, okay, well, please wait till the song's out. I was like, okay. But yeah, no, basically the only time that started happening, the label started caring and reaching out and sending you songs early as if you were press. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, now I weirdly count as press, like,
yeah. Oh yeah, me too. It's so bizarre.
Yeah, right. And it's like, is since the pandemic, like, since that's basically it. Other than that, no, like, those guitar covers, there's no place to get them early. Like, it's simple as that. Like, you could maybe try to go to Kingdom Leaks and see if you don't get viruses back in the day, but even that was like, there's no point, it's not worth it. So it was just like, well, song's out, like, all right, like, let's go see how fast I can do it. And it wasn't the most accurate looking back on it, but I thought I was really accurate. But you know, you learn and you grow. But yeah, no, there was it, that's a only recent thing, like, with, and it's only because of reactions. I think if I was still doing guitar covers, they would be like, why are we sending this to you early?
I think the time that I really noticed what you were doing was, I think it was a Trivium track, and you did a cover very quickly. Hmm. And I'm like, how the hell did he do this so fast? Because, you know, obviously with that too, I mean, there's a lot of guitar work going on. So it's not just a quick riff. It's, you know, you got to learn lots of stuff going on in a Trivium tune. I believe that's what it was.
Yeah. I just, so many fucking bands, I forgot. Yeah. Like, but yeah, Trivium, I definitely have done a few for them. Where it's just, yeah, like, it's a process for me, especially because, like, that was my thing. That's all I did, was learn write music and then learn songs and try to cover them. Like, I had it down to a science. Like, well, you know, understanding songwriting in theory also helped, you know, and not like this, like, advanced level. Like, I didn't go to school for any of this stuff, like songwriting or music or any of that. But, like, to this level of understanding patterns, basically. Yeah. And like, oh, okay, here's the chorus. So you learn that riff. The chorus happens three times. It's usually copy-pasted. Unless there's some variations.
Right.
Okay. So you learn 20 seconds, but you actually learn a minute.
Right. I get you.
Of the same riff. So, okay. You know, and then once I start to digest things like that, of like, oh, this verse is the main riff that repeats four times. It's a copy paste. Sure. Sometimes there's little spices. I hated those so much because you have to remember them on the, you have to know which ones they are. Right.
Yeah. The 12th time he goes to the 11th fret and not the 8th fret. And you know,
those would make me fuck up a cover way more than like actually hard parts would, which is really weird. It's just like the little changes in the structure. Cause I would do only one take. Like, it would be like, here's the one take. Like, just, I got to get it. Like, the first take, the first take, I get it as close as I want to get it. That's the video. That's the audio. It's as simple as that. Cause I didn't even know how to video edit or audio edit anyway. So I was like, well, this is what you get. So I trained very much in that sense, and understanding the structure of songs, like, that was a big thing for me. And that's just how I did. I would just dissect, like, first of all, what's the tuning? Boom, boom, boom. And I would sit there like hardcore for an hour at least and just be like, let's go. Here's this part. Notes. Okay. What key is it? What key is it in? Right. What are the chromatic notes that they're kind of doing? And if I've covered a song from them before, it's also just like three times easier because you get this is a weird wording of it. You get intimate with the guitarist's language.
Yeah.
Once you've done that already, like, you know their patterns, you know their go-tos a lot of the time.
Oh, yeah.
So you start to be like, okay, they're doing this, and then I hear this note. It would make sense that they hit it here. Yes, because that's what they do. That's the right, patterns, that's,
The people have their favorite notes. Yeah, definitely.
Exactly. So I would just dissect it like that, and basically it. This thing, which for a lot of people is like this massive 4-minute song that's very, you know, right?
Right,
to attack, because you have to learn 4 minutes of something. I'm able to bring it down to, well, really it's just 1 minute of different shit, and a lot of the patterns are based on other patterns and other riffs, you know what I mean? So that's how I was able to dissect it. But also I wasn't covering like crazy tech death shit all the time, which, or like really really proggy stuff, because it's just like, I mean, that's it's that that follows the same logical steps I would take, but it's like it's just more longer and harder, and there's less repeating patterns is basically it.
When you're looking at other people's, like, I don't know how much you know number watch, or you go and like you feel like you're doing really well, and then you look over and you're like, well shit, you know, this guy just, you know, there's a million views on this, you know, this other thing, or there are right. other people doing different types of video. Because when you get to a certain point, you're like, well, maybe this is just the audience that likes things like this. But then you see, you know, a charismatic voice, like she's right. got bazillion views. Like, I mean, she does a very cool show. Probably yeah. one of my favorites. I love watching her facial expressions. And it's also kind of got some crossover too, because of the, you know, she's watching metalcore stuff, but she's also like an operatic person. So, right. you know, maybe the, you know, there's some crossover there, or like, what's his name? Rick Beato. That dude I'm a musician. I've played music my whole life, been in bands. Well, but he still blows me away when he starts breaking down songs. Mm-hmm. He's like, well, what they do, you know, they go from the B minor seventh here to the blah. I'm like, Jesus Christ, dude. And he just plays everything just like, just so, I guess what, just easily.
Right.
Know, he'll just sit there and be like, you know, oh, they're doing this. Oh, what, you know, he'll break down a song or something. And, you know, his, you know, views are obviously insane. So, I mean, do you get discouraged by those views? Do you get like, you maybe hope for there are more viewers out there that you got to find, or, you know, that are going to come across you? How do you look at all that?
No, that stuff is very inspiring, because it makes me know that there's a higher limit than what I'm doing at all points.
Right.
Like that. So that's great. If anything, I'd get discouraged if I saw everyone else was doing like shitty. And then I'm right. like
the king.
Yeah, well, I don't want it. Yeah. That's the thing. Like, I don't want it. I don't want that, because I want to know. I want to see these people up there and be like, oh, this is possible. It's right. possible to go to keep growing, right? So if I don't want to be up there and be like, where is everybody? Because then it's like, oh shit. Right. Not saying that I could even get up there, but right. in the sense of just like, if anything, it's more encouraging seeing other people that have gone up there, get there, that get the wider audiences, the bigger views or whatever. Because then it just is like, okay, the potential is much more than I'm even maybe seeing right now for what I can do, as long as I do things right and I continue to innovate, I continue to grow, I continue to build what I've done, and in the right way too. Because everyone also builds in different ways, and that's why it's like, if you look at other people's statistics or whatever, analytics, it's really tough to compare. Because mm-hmm. like, even like, let's say someone that is more of a guitar YouTuber, right? Like, there's a lot of awesome ones, like Music Is Win, Rick Beato, there's Adam Neely and stuff like that, which they're all super dope, and they're also very like, they're the guitar YouTubers though, mm-hmm. right? But they do metal stuff here and there, but they're guitar YouTubers. And I know that in my life I actually had to make a decision: do I become a guitar YouTuber, or am I a metal YouTuber? Because I can blend them all I want, but this is the thing: you do guitar YouTube, you now talk about classic rock, you talk mm-hmm. about metal, like you talk about these big topics, which has a bigger range of people and fans yeah. and stuff than me talking about deathcore. Like, right? So, but if you do that also, I my biggest thing is I wanted people still to go to my original music, like to tie in what we were talking about earlier. And if I'm covering like a lot of classic rock stuff and, you know, Metallica, love Metallica and all those old school bands, and then I'm like, hey, here's my new modern metal song, people are going to be like it doesn't convert as well to what I'm realistically always doing currently and like pushing with my projects and what I'm listening to and moving forward. So that was always a thing for me that I had to accept, is I'm not going to be able to catch on to that guitar community, which is way better and bigger than the metal community, like in the sense of like just people there viewing. Also, your CPMs are better. Side note, always just saying, like way fucking better in the guitar community than the metal, a lot better. And yeah, that's a decision I did actually have to make in my career. I'm not saying that I would have done great in the guitar space, but I knew my shit enough, and you know, I knew a lot of theory. I knew a lot of unique perspectives. And again, I was a guitarist actually, yeah, mainly, but that's just a decision I had to make to go into the metal sphere instead and see what happens, because I knew when it came to longevity, I would sustain longer in the metal scene than I would in just the guitar scene. And I still have always the decision to do guitar related content and I'd be fine, but at least it would be metal based and I would get the audience that I know would give a shit about when I released original music and stuff.
I could see that. My thing's always, I assume, like, I had one of the guys from Bloodywood on.
Oh, they're,
you know,
yeah, they're,
I, you know, but I think it's like awesome band, you know, they're doing something cool. They took metal and they're adding the Indian elements to it. So there's, yeah, something, you know, fresh to it. And I was like, this interview is going to be awesome. And I put it out and it's like crickets, you know, because just nobody's, not enough people have heard about them to really, you know, get behind it and push it and share it with their friends and all that stuff. And then, you know, basically one of my older friends that I've had in music for a long time is Fred Corey from Cinderella. And I was like, you know, I needed a guest. I was like, hey, Fred, you know, you want to come on the show? Dude, we get talking about Cinderella and, you know, the one of the biggest episodes I've had in forever. Nice. And you're like, so yeah, you, I get what you're saying. You know, you kind of get those big, the bigger name, classic rock, you know, widespread, been around forever. You know, you throw that out there and people are going to, you know, eat it up. Yeah. And you get what you think is, man, you guys got to all hear this new band. They're awesome. And everybody's like, man, I'm good.
It's just a bigger pool. Like, that's the thing. Like, true. So it's the guitar community. And they're very, like, hard. And that's another thing is, like, love the guitar community to a point. But it's also, they're, weirdly enough, they're very serious. Like, and that's something where I also have to be like, is this something I really like? Like, can I deal with that? Because I'm not a serious dude. Like, even if I do it, like, my most serious video is like a theory video, and I'm still like joking around in it. Yeah. Right. And it's like, even with that, it's like the guitar community isn't as much about that sometimes. Like, it's much more serious. It's much more guitar, you know, respect for the craft and that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just different things. Again, they overlap sometimes, but it really is that. And that's why I see, like, comparing to those guys is much harder because it is that different feel. Right. They're so good at what they do there, and they kick ass, and they're amazing. And the music they do right, though, is also more in that style. It just makes full sense for them. Whereas me, it's like I said, I'm talking about Slash for a second, or I'm talking about, you know, BB King, and then all of a sudden I'm releasing a deathcore song. It's just like, it's a weird conversion, right. Even though I love all those legendary guitarists. I grew up, you know, with a lot of that stuff. So
yeah, you'll get in there and like the guitar nerds will tear you apart. You're like, actually that was downpicked and you're not downpicking that.
And that's the thing too, I'm not a gear dude, like, at all. Oh, which is like that's why too, it's like I am not a gear dude. I'm like, this play and it sound good, I do. Like, you know, right. What I mean, like, I'm not a gear dude. And even theoretically, how I explain things is very not traditional. It's much more this pattern oriented way and logical way of how I came to conclusions. And that did stick with a lot of people when I did my like theory lesson, like on YouTube, like fucking years back. People still asked for another thing. And I even taught privately for a long time. And I saw like insane growth from people I was teaching, but also it's not these traditional routes, which is a great thing because it's a new different perspective that actually a lot of people were appreciating. But also a lot of people are going to be like, well, it's not this traditional way, so you're just fucking wrong. just like, all right, well, like there's nothing I can do in that sense. Right. So.
Yeah, I was never gear guy, but I remember touring and I would get, you know, get to the sound that I wanted and like, right, nobody touch anything. And then you get off stage and somebody's like, dude, man, your bass tone, you know, your bass tone's this, your bass tone's that. What do you do? And I'm like, I don't know. I just turned it on, you know, made the equalizer smile.
Like, yeah, I've had the same. It's so funny. I get comments about my guitar tone. I've had the same guitar tone for 7-8 years, for rhythm tone.
Yeah.
And I use it the same one on all my covers, unless I'm using like a plugin, obviously, or like doing a sponsor video or something, or like doing a demo. But other than that, most of my covers are just that, or like original music. And even in or even my original content that I use music, but even my actual, like Termina, this new song, I love that people are saying, dude, I love that you changed your guitar tone. Thank you. And I'm like,
stepping up your game, man.
And I'm like, I gave my stems to Zach Cervini, and he actually used my guitar tone. He said he couldn't beat it for the thing we were going for. And I was like, that's the same guitar tone, guys. And that's even covers. The covers, I use the same guitar tone. And everyone's like, oh, this one's so much. I love the tone. And this one's so much better. And I'm like, all right, guys. Like,
tell us your secrets, man. But
tell us secrets. I use the same thing for 7 years. That's the secret.
Well, man, as we wrap up here, man, just kind of throw out, obviously, you know, how people can find, you know, how can people get a hold of you? No, how can people, you know, follow you in all of your ventures?
I mean, I do a lot of different stuff. You know, it's Nick Nocturnal at everything. If you like Termina, it's Termina at everything, or Termina Official at everything. Like, it depends what you want. If you're into streaming stuff and you want to see more of a live thing where I check out shit and be dumb, it's check out the Twitch. If you want YouTube, it's YouTube. If you want just meme Insta pics, it's on Insta. If you want stupid vocal things on TikTok and just experimental dumb shit, dude. Yeah, I don't know. I do different stuff on all the platforms. So just go vibe them out. See which ones you hate. Leave a hate comment. Drive the engagement, and maybe you'll like one of them. Who knows?
I was watching watching cringe metal videos, and yourself popped up, and I thought that's like that was the best part of the whole video. It's just, you know, you're trying to watch cringy things, and then yourself pops up. So
I can be cringe, and that's totally cool. I'm fine. I'd rather be cringe and be me than try to be something else. Unless I'm doing a skit video, which is very obviously me trying to portray a thing. But
yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing, man. People in metal take everything just so seriously, and I'm and I'm, you know, I've never been like metal and horror guy. I'm like metal and, you know, watch comedy guy. So I mean, I want, you know, but I don't like jokes in my metal. I've never been a big, like, too big of like a joke band kind of thing, things like that. Like Steel Panther, never been a huge fan of.
Gotcha.
You know, things like that. Like, I don't want you to be joking in metal, but I also don't want to take it way too seriously on the other end too.
Yeah, because I mean, that's like, it's metal. It's art. It's fun. It's creativity. It's excitement. Like, it's all these things that are like, sure, you should, like, that's the thing. Like, I take my craft seriously. Yeah. Like, I take memes seriously. That's the thing. But I still want to have fun and enjoy and mess around and do these things that further creativity and do make this feel something that creates the sustainability. Cause if this feels like serious all the time, like this is hardcore job, like, hey, still no complaints. Fucking, I'm blessed to do this as a hardcore, crazy, super serious, you know, job where every content piece has to be extremely serious, but it's just not as sustainable. Like, it's not as fun. It's so much more draining instead of much more naturally having fun and being able to just be yourself. And I'm a bit of a dumbass. So like, it's just like,
aren't we all?
What you see in the videos. Yeah.
What is the Slipknot thing in the background there? I can't tell. It looks like do I need to send someone to your house to get you copper infringement?
It's a Slipknot. It's from Display. I did a Display.
Oh, nice.
I did a Display pre-roll like a year, 2 years ago, but I had nothing else to like put up here anyways. And I'm like, well, they look cool, so I'll just keep them up there. So yeah, that's just been there. It's just Display cool. Slipknot, and the other one's just a wolf. That's all.
Yeah, that wolf looks like a truck stop t-shirt.
Yes,
it's awesome. It anytime my wife and I are on like a road trip or whatever, I'm like, I'm gonna go in and I'm gonna get a bald eagle t-shirt and
America, fuck yeah. Right,
exactly. Well, Dick, man, I appreciate you taking some time with me today, and I guess we will talk to you soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Hope you have an awesome, good one. Let your mouth go sick and dry. Put your life into your death now. Let them see till you die. Die!
Huge thank you to Nick Nocturnal for coming on the show. Make sure to go and check out his YouTube channel, his Facebook, his Instagram, his Twitter, all that good stuff. And follow him and follow everything that he does. What a good, solid dude, man.
Yeah, he's great, man. I chatted with him myself a few weeks ago. He's the real deal, man. He's just like, it's funny, but when you talk to him, you're expecting him to give you the kind of the secret sauce.
Yeah.
How to do it. And he's just like, I don't know, man. I just make videos.
Well, that's like, you know, you and I both said the same thing. You're like, what is he promoting? And you're like, I don't know. And then even at the end of the interview, I'm like, how do people find you? And he's like, I don't know, the internet, like, you know, just kind of having fun with it, man. But he's definitely doing it right, man. He figured out his own secret sauce.
Absolutely.
And now he's out doing his stuff, man. But,
sure.
Well, before we get out of here, man, let's do some recommendations and what you've been listening to, watching, anything good going on?
Nothing listening to, really nothing watching other than I'm going to give a non-recommendation. Do not watch this fucking DB Cooper documentary on Netflix.
I watched a little bit of that. Yeah.
Oh, that sucked. Dude, it's not a documentary if the guy comes into it with a conclusion already made up. Yeah. He already had his mind made up. And then you spend four episodes or five episodes, whatever it is, just him banging on his conclusion. Just, it wasn't good. I watched the whole thing because I'm an idiot and I can't turn it off once I start.
Yeah.
But, you know, I watched it and just was like, yeah, you know, it's weird that Netflix, I don't know if you've always thought this or not, but like 5 years ago, if it was a Netflix original, it was a guaranteed homer. You'd watch it. If it didn't matter what it was.
Yeah.
You'd watch it because it was going to be good. That day is done. Netflix has really gone down the crapper with their, you know, with their programming, and this was a good example of not being good. So avoid that. It's called DB Cooper, Where Are You? It's not very good.
Did you watch the Bill Burr comedy special?
I did.
Did you like it?
It's okay. I think Burr's okay. You know, I think he's gone a little too far down the trying to please everybody a little bit hole. You know, I don't want to say the woke hole because he definitely says some things that probably pissed off the woke people.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, he's definitely kind of still central, you know, he's definitely not choosing a leaning, but it almost feels like he's trying to make everybody sort of happy.
Right.
I don't want to piss anybody off too much because that might impact me a little bit too much. He's got, if you like Burr though, there's a thing on the Roku channel called Immoral.
Okay.
I don't know if you've watched that or not. It's worth the time to watch. It's a little series of 5 minute clips.
Is that where he's like the maintenance man or whatever?
Yeah.
We'll watch that.
It's really, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, and I think some of the stuff on the special was good, but overall, if I was rating it like on a scale of 1 to 10, I'd give it like a 6.
Yeah, I think I would go a little bit higher, maybe like a 7.5, but it was definitely like, you know, it definitely had its moment. Like, I mean, there were some moments where I was, you know, laughing, almost crying. And my wife was, you know, laughing, crying at some of the, you know, when he's talking about the way his dad treated him as a kid.
Sure.
And you know, like, what were you doing to the dog? You know, like kind of how the times have changed when, you know, they would, if a dog bit a kid now, you put the dog down. But as a kid, you know, we were like, why were you messing with the dog? You
right.
know, like,
exactly.
you don't blame, you know, that, like that type stuff. I thought you would enjoy the abortion stuff at the end. You know, that was like, you know, that definitely, I was like, oh, Chris Aiken.
Yeah, that definitely hit my wheelhouse. The thing, even though, about his dad, didn't you feel like you kind of already saw that before if you watched F is for Family?
Yeah, I didn't never watch F is for Family. I never really got into it.
I watched that whole series.
Yeah.
And a lot of what he's doing is the stuff that F is for Family was based on. So, yeah, it's cool. I'm definitely not saying don't watch it. It's definitely worth the watch. You will laugh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you will laugh if you watch it, but is it his best work? I don't think so.
Right. I mean, the last couple have been good. I don't think they've been great. Mm. But I mean, some, like those early specials he had were just insane, like insanely good.
Well, that's before you had to please the Star Wars audience and the, right? You know, the Netflix people and everything else. Now he's, you know, now he's got a big salary to lose if he says something too radical.
Yeah. I mean, we have tickets here to see him in September. And I mean, he's playing the arena, like he's playing the, you know, where I saw Metallica, you know, like where I saw Slayer. So, I mean, it's going to be pretty nuts to see him in I saw him in like 2011 at a smaller club and it was awesome.
That's cool.
But, like to see him now at the arena, I mean, you know, it's just, that's just one of the things where, you know, you don't necessarily, you know, have anything to gain from feeling proud for him. But I mean, I remember I've watched him go from nothing to the, you know, playing the arena. That's crazy. You know, you in a weird way, you know, you feel, you know, you're like, I'm proud of you. You know, like,
he's one of us. He's one of us.
But the only recommendation I have this week too is a movie called Hustle on Netflix with the Adam Sandler movie about basketball.
Okay,
dude, it's pretty predictable. It's, you know, I mean, the couple of things here and there where you're, you know, you think it's going to be one way and it kind of goes the other way. But as for, it's a serious movie, you know, Adam Sandler and the, you know, he plays a basketball scout.
Right.
Know, finds a kid overseas. I'm trying to say his name is Juancho Hernan. Let's see, Hernan Gomez. Juancho Hernan Gomez plays Bo Cruz in the movie. Cool story about him is, I guess, like during the pandemic, Adam Sandler kind of just put this out there that he needed a basketball player to be in his movie.
Okay.
And this dude is, you know, he's an NBA player. And he, his sister was like, just try it out. You know, why don't you just see what happens kind of thing?
Sure.
And he actually auditioned and got it. And man, he kills it in this movie. I mean, you believe everything, you know, you believe that he's just some upstart kid that, you know, has to try really hard and all this other stuff. It's got like a little bit of a Rocky feel to it, I think, you know, and, you know, there's only 6 weeks to the NBA combine. So there's a training montage and all that stuff, but you know, it's got a few good laughs here and there, but for the most part, it's just one of Sandler's more serious roles. And I know he's a big basketball fan too. So, you know, he definitely put his heart and soul into this one, you know, a lot of cameos and all that stuff too. So I think great movie, man. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
I will check it out.
You probably shouldn't because it's one of my recommendations.
Yeah, that's true. I might end up hating you next week. Like the last recommendation you gave.
I will say that the it's this like other kid that's going to be in the draft or whatever. And just I'm sure he's a great kid in real life, but you walk away just fucking hating this kid. Like, you just like, you're like, you motherfucker. Like just the way he like talks to the guy and stuff like that, man. If he's not like this in real life, this kid deserves an Oscar because of just how, like, just you hate, you walk away just hating this kid.
Nice. Very cool.
But yeah. Good times. I was going to see if his name is on here. I don't see his, I can't believe he's not it's Anthony Edwards, I believe.
Oh, from ER fame. Not that's it. Not that.
Anthony no, like Edwards? The basketball player.
Oh,
plays for the, actually doesn't say, but yeah, he's a Anthony Edwards, the basketball plays selected number one by the Minnesota Timberwolves in the 2020 draft.
Okay.
So yeah. So he's a younger kid, but man, you just walk away. Just wanting to kill this guy.
He's a great professional dick.
Yes. Very much so.
Nice.
But yeah. So there we go. Yeah, good times. I mean, I do like Adam Sandler serious roles, like, you know, The Cobbler and all those weird movies, you know. Mm-hmm. Like I think he you know, obviously you love all the Billy Madisons and all that stuff too, but I think he plays the serious roles pretty well too.
Right. No, he's good. I like Adam Sandler.
Good times. And again, man, I've been tearing up this Fly on the Wall podcast with all the SNL guys.
Nice.
I'm probably almost all the way through them. There's probably 40 episodes. Nice. It's just crazy just hearing everybody's, you know, just different. The one thing that I'm really taking away from all this stuff is just how many people that you see that, you know, Dana Carvey, Wayne's World, Saturday Night Live, Chopping Broccoli, all that stuff. And just how much self-doubt these people have.
I know. Like, it's amazing.
you know, you think that these people just have everything figured out, mm-hmm. and they're, and like, you know, Dana Carvey is just like, I thought I was going to get fired every week. You know, every time they were, every time they were like, you know, 10 minutes or 10 seconds to showtime, he wanted to throw up, sure. you know, just all that stuff. And you just, it always goes back to, you know, you and I talk a lot about podcasting and podcasters and, mm-hmm. you know, trying to please everybody, not trying to please everybody, but you know, you can go to your favorite podcast ever and mm-hmm. look at the reviews and there's negative reviews and you're like, this guy murders and
yeah.
people still hate, you know? And, mm-hmm. and then you also have that side of the Dana Carveys and of the world. And even like, you know, Daryl Hammond was on there talking about just being nervous and
sure.
you know, and like trying to figure out how to do somebody's, you know, an impression of somebody and, you know, failing at it over and over and not getting it and thinking you're going to get fired. And I'm like, you're one of the most incredible impressionists of all time.
Right.
And you're just like, I'm probably going to get fired this week. You know, it's so crazy.
Right. Well, dude, I mean, you're in bands. You've been in bands, man. Have you ever met a confident band musician ever? Every musician I've ever met is like, they get ready to go on stage. Like, oh, I hope I fucking sound good tonight. I hope, you know, and then when they come off, they're the first question that they ask, was it good tonight, man? Was it good? It didn't feel right. It felt off. Something was wrong.
Yeah.
Every show, no matter how much they kill.
Well, I did that. I mean, I did that at the live show. I came off stage and I was like, you know, talked to the wife. I was like, how was it? Was it okay? Was there, I don't know. Was it sound okay? Was I too loud? Was I not loud enough? You know, like, right. yeah, you just go through all of that every time you, you know, every time you do anything like that.
I think it's just the nature of performing because performing is, you know, performing is 100% for the adulation of the people. And you can't get that all the time. So you doubt yourself.
Right.
You know, you're like, yeah, I know I'm doing well, but people aren't feeling it. So it must be me, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's like all those. I've definitely had those shows where you just like, man, this show sucks. I'm like everything sucks. The, you know, I can't, you know, the bass sounds wrong, this, that, and the other thing. And you walk off stage and like, dude, that was the best show I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. You're like that was, no, it wasn't.
Yeah. Well, dude, it's like, I've told you this before. Me and my son, we watch AEW wrestling every Wednesday. And, you know, at the end of each episode, we both kind of give it a review.
Yeah.
We'll both say, it was 5 out of 10 or 6 out of 10 or whatever.
Right.
And then we both watch, there's a podcast out there called Wrestle Talk that's on YouTube. And they do a review of it.
What kind of show is it?
It's just, I know, it's just shocking. Yeah, it's all about badminton, you know. Right. No, but they review the show. They break it down and they review it. And I mean, me and my son are always wrong with them. Because it's like, we'll be like, that wasn't very good. 3 out of 10. Next day, 95% greatest episode ever. We're like, what the hell?
Yeah.
You know, what are you guys watching that we're not? Make us understand it better. Because we want the enjoyment out of it. We ain't getting it, you know. And dude, nobody ever agrees. That's the beauty of entertainment.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's like any of those Star Wars shows or whatever. They come out mm-hmm. and then, you know, a couple of days later the reaction shows come out. And I'll watch I'll listen to the podcasts that are based on that stuff because those guys are seeing things that you're not seeing.
Yeah.
And like, even in like, you know, the NFL's coming up and we'll mm-hmm. be, you know, I'll watch a Titans game and be like, man, this sucks. You know, why do we do this? Why do we do that? And then they actually come out with somebody will have a theory of why, you know, why they went for it on this fourth down, but not that fourth down. And you're like, mm-hmm. okay, well, I guess I could see that. But, you know, at the time you're like, this all fucking sucks.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I don't know, man. Yeah. I'm looking forward to the, you know, training camp starts soon and preseason and man, football is going to be right up on
weeks,
us pretty quick. Yeah.
7 weeks till opening night or something like that. Seven weeks from when this is released.
Yep. September 11th. I guess that's the first week for my team, but you know, never forget.
Yeah. Never forget what? A Titans loss?
Oh. I don't know. We normally do pretty good on opening weekend, like a few years
ago. Yeah, so do the Browns. They lose every single year.
Oh, good God. But it's going to be good times, man. Well, that'll do it for another episode of Talk To Me here, notfest.com. And so for the Talk To Me podcast, I'm Joshua Toomey.
I am Chris Agan.
And we will talk to you soon.
See ya.
The Talk To Me podcast presented by knotfest.com. Follow the show at Talk To Me Talk. Be sure to subscribe, rate the podcast, and leave a review on your favorite podcast app to get the latest from the Talk To Me podcast.